Akmal Thea dari Fakultas Media di Universitas Vancouver Island. Anda sedang mendengarkan Radio CHY 101,7 FM Nanaimo.
Welcome to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. My name's Theo Finnegan, and I'm talking with Christina Mansueti, who teaches in VOU's English department. On Friday, September 22nd, from 10 till 11:30 in the Malaspina Theatre, Christina will give a presentation titled Laughing Women, Unruly Women, Trainwrecks, and the Carnivalesque, discussing two recent female-centred TV UK comedies, Fleabag and Chewing Gum. As well as working at VOU, Christina is in the final year of her PhD at the University of Sunderland in Media and Communications. She holds a bachelor's degree in English from Vancouver Island University and a master's degree in cultural studies and critical theory from McMaster University. Her research focuses on how contemporary feminisms are represented, negotiated, challenged, and reaffirmed in contemporary female-authored comedies. Hi, Christina. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So you did your undergrad at VIU?
I did.
In English?
English, yeah.
How was that experience, and what is it like coming back as an instructor?
I kind of feel like I grew up at VIU because when I was in elementary school, my mom went back to school and came to VIU, and I used to fake sick and I'd get to sit in on her classes sometimes. So that she was taking. So I had that, and then I did my undergrad here kind of on a fluke. I originally started at UVic, but I felt a little bit impersonal just with the large class sizes, being one of 200 students in a first year lecture. And then my mom encouraged me to try VIU for the smaller class sizes, so I did. And then I just slowly ended up getting my degree, and I tried everything but English. A lot of the instructors that I had are still here in the faculty, so it's been really interesting to work with them, and also wonderful because they've been really gracious and welcoming to me, and really generous with their resources and their time. So,
my mom works at a university, the one I went to my undergrad in New Zealand. She was in administration, and she worked there right through my sort of teen years. It felt like a familiar place even before I went there. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't, when I went to do my undergrad, it kind of felt quite like home actually, and or quite welcoming. So Yeah, it's interesting. So you're doing your PhD or finishing your PhD at the moment at University of Sunderland in the UK.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about your doctoral project and what is it about? How did you arrive at the topic you're working on?
Yeah.
Those kind of things.
So my subject area is how contemporary feminisms are negotiated in two female-authored British comedies, and that's Fleabag and Chewing Gum. So Fleabag by Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Chewing Gum by Michaela Cole. And I guess just to take it back a little bit, I've always been really interested and drawn to comedy just in by way of how it offers a social critique. Like, I remember growing up and I didn't understand American politics. I thought it was the most absurd thing. And then I remember I started to watch Saturday Night Live, and they specifically kind of break down and parody American politics. And I thought, to me, that really distilled some of the basic information and also poked fun at it, or kind of exposed some of the insanity of it all. And so I've always really been drawn to comedy. And then when I did my master's at McMaster, I also kind of looked at comedy as well through like the Saturday Night lens, and like through people, specifically Trevor Noah and The Daily Show. I like looking at how people have dealt with the immensity of life, I guess, and I like looking at that through humor.
I moved to Canada in 2004 to go to grad school, and that was the year Bush got elected.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the main ways that I kind of came to understand what was going on, like yourself, but also kind of coped with it as well, was like watching, and at that point it was Jon Stewart before Trevor Noah took over, like watching him and then Stephen Colbert as well. And so this, I don't know whether this is a newer thing or what, but like coming to terms with or getting your news through those kind of sources felt like it was a change at that time, or something different from just kind of trusting regular news sources. So yeah, I definitely that resonates with me, the idea of comedy and satire, right, being a way into kind of serious issues, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Thomas King is someone who has, I think, talked at great lengths about his use of comedy, but has also and also has demonstrated the use of comedy in order to talk about tragic issues, specifically for him, indigenous issues. So I've always thought that he says words to the effect of, I think comedy is my strategy, but tragedy is his content. And that's always kind of rung at the back of my mind. When I look at comedy, I'm like, what else is going on behind this humorous kind of presentation that you initially get?
The TV landscape has changed like immeasurably, right? In the last couple of decades, I suppose. I was just reading an essay recently by David Foster Wallace called Television and US Fiction, which is from 1993. And so he's talking about how TV has, and in this case it will be like network TV and cable TV, affected like fiction writers and the forms and the content they write about. And it was really interesting reading that essay because he, you know, was obviously writing the decade before, I suppose, or even more before streaming starts to take off, right? And there was, so I felt this weird kind of disjunct between what, you know, he didn't sort of know what was coming in the next few years. We've often heard that we're living through like a golden age of TV, and I definitely remember that shift from growing up in the 80s, thinking, being told TV was kind of rotting my brain. And then all of a sudden it's like The Sopranos and The Wire and all of these great prestige shows, which are like what film used to, you know, this kind of reversion of the hierarchy or shift in hierarchy. So I guess I wonder about your take as a scholar of television on where are we now? Where's the television going? Particularly maybe in terms of, say, feminism and post-feminisms. Is the future bright for female-centric TV, both creator-wise and content-wise? Where do you stand on the TV landscape at the moment?
I think, like, also just my nature is, like, I lean towards kind of optimism with the way the world is moving, even though things can be quite dire. But one of the things that I've noticed and that I appreciate with newer television is more voices having the stage, and I think, or the screen. And I specifically think with someone like Michaela Cole, who came from a Black working class family in Britain. Her mom is from Ghana, and she talks specifically about like needing more Black working class women in writers' rooms and to write their stories, because until we get more accurate representations of what that life is like and some of the nuances, then it's hard for other people to write those stories. And I think that's something that I'm really drawn to is just the variety in voices that we're now getting on television.
There does seem to be more choice and more sort of, it's not quite the right word, but like niches, right? So there's more content, I guess, available. And yet at the same time, I was reading something the other day about a show I hadn't even heard of getting canceled really quickly. So there's this sort of rapidity of things sort of appearing and then disappearing. Is that...
With everything in our life, like, we expect information so quickly, and like, we don't really give a lot of shows the chance. I think I was thinking about this actually on my drive here about Schitt's Creek, and like that really took off once it ended. And it's like, had that show not had however many seasons it did, like it might have been canceled after one. And I think for me, it's one of my favorite shows. I love what it did. But yeah, I think also too with the way that we expect to be have our attention grabbed, because I think we're so used to like a 50 or I don't even know how long a TikTok is now, but like we're so oversaturated with information and constantly needing to be engaged that I do think that has changed television.
The phenomenology of watching TV, it seems to me, is different now, because I mean, I remember the days of like you waited for the night that MASH was on, or right, there was TV shows that were on at a certain time and on a certain day, which is very obviously, I mean, there are still channels which do that, but like I think particularly maybe younger people are experiencing TV more as, you know, you select what you want to watch when you want to watch it. Do you think that changes your experience of the content itself? Like, is there a sort of, like, in other words, the way that you're watching something affects how you perceive what it's about?
Before streaming, like, I wasn't watching anything on a laptop, really, unless it was a DVD. But I grew up watching it with my family. There was always that dialogue that happened in between the commercial break. So I think there's also that like analysis of what's going on. And also that like sharing of space and that community. My family, we used to watch American Idol a few times a week, and that was our family time. And we were, so I think, yeah, the whole nature of it now, it feels like maybe more of a solitary thing. Like you could have two people sitting in bed with each other and headphones in and watching two completely different things.
And yet there's still at the same time, like there's this incredible opportunity to sort of talk to people on the other side of the world. So there's a weird kind of,
yes,
like confluence of or flourishing of the ability to analyze shows, let's say.
Yes. I like the point that you brought up too about being able to communicate with people outside of just your family network too, and to analyze shows and also to see how they're being received, I think, is really interesting just outside of your own social network or your immediate geographic location.
Hello, this is Todd Barsby of the Faculty of Science and Technology at Vancouver Island University, and you are listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities on CHLY 101.7 FM Nanaimo.
We have got you in a very nice hotel. I don't know how you like to work, but I can arrange for an office if you like.
I work in hotel. Oh. He's better. Away from all your little petty bickerings and interference.
You know, Tolstoy used to write in the village square. The faces inspired him.
He did not need inspiration. God spoke through his pen.
Oh, that is so true.
Yes.
Although, one wonders if War and Peace would have been as highly acclaimed as it was had it been published under its original title, War, What Is It Good For?
One of the things that I don't know if you find this as well, I do a lot of comfort watching with downtime. And so it's a lot of, speaking of like the phenomenology of watching TV, it's a lot of clips from shows I've already seen.
Yes.
So I watch a lot of Seinfeld clips.
Okay.
Like on YouTube. Like not, like I can watch the whole show on Netflix on my computer, but I'll like look up specific scenes if I'm tired and going to bed and I just want to relax.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, it's this 4-minute bit or whatever. So that's, it's interesting how that kind of, my habits maybe have changed.
Mm-hmm.
It might be being a parent of young children and being,
yes,
really tired at the end of the day and wanting
of
to
course.
Like consume things that way. So I was going to ask you what your experience of the northeast of England was like, but it's been virtual.
Yeah, it was challenging because I had finished my master's, which I did in Hamilton, Ontario.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that is kind of when COVID hit and we were just going into the writing phase of our thesis. And I'd moved back to the island because this is where is my home. And that process gave me a good training ground, I think, to be confident in finishing a PhD via distance. Although I'd had hopes of going, I then got work with ABE and that kept me here. It's been challenging for sure to not have such a defined cohort to lean on in person. One of the things I do really like about it, my MA program was incredibly competitive and there was a lot of compare and despair. There was a lot of comparing of grades and there was just, in my eyes, I found it sometimes unnecessary competition, and I'm much more for the open, free sharing of information and resources and the things that I have found helpful. Like I'm not trying to gatekeep anything essentially. And so being a little bit more solitary, I have found a lot more peace in that sense and a lot less anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I have also, I think, really lucked out with great supervisors, which I'm realizing might not be the norm, but they're incredibly accessible. The university was kind of set up for the potential of distance learning. So all of the, I mean, the one thing that's is challenging sometimes is the time difference. It's an 8-hour time difference. And so I was getting up at 2:30 in the morning to spend 8 hours on Zoom for my induction courses for a few weeks. So that was fun. But, you know, I went a little nocturnal for a bit and got through.
So for the colloquium you're presenting on Fleabag and Chewing Gum, which obviously is part of your doctoral research as well, can you talk a little bit about what you're going to present on in the colloquium presentation?
Yeah. So both shows are very, or series are very interesting because they both originate as one-woman plays. For Fleabag, hers began as a challenge from one of her friends to on a storytelling night to tell the story or to have a stand-up kind of storytelling evening. And then, so that's how she developed the character of Fleabag, which is also not semi-autobiographical in any way, but it, she says it is personally driven in the sense that some of the sexual escapades that happen and some of the things like her mother passing away and her best friend passing away, those things aren't necessarily true to her life, but she tried to imagine what it would feel like if she lost her best friend and her mother. Chewing Gum comes from Chewing Gum Dreams, which is Michaela Cole's one-woman play that she devised, I think, in art school. And then obviously they both kind of got adopted for television, but they were all both kind of parallel in time. Their plays, I believe, were showing in like 2013, 2012, and then they came to television in around 2015, 2016. And I like how they both still retain that sort of intimacy that they have on stage through the television, because they both employ the use of the direct address, so they're talking directly to the screen. They're creating an intimate relationship with the audience. And both of them also deal with, I'm going to say, like messy feminisms or train wreck feminisms, in the sense that they're very outrageous. They're sexually explicit at times. They're excessive in emotion, desire, and I would say like consumption of alcohol, recreational drugs, and just really kind of exploring what it means to be human, I think. And also kind of toying with this idea of the carnivalesque in terms of how it can invert certain social hierarchies. And so I've loved looking at both of these texts kind of side by side, and looking how they are grappling with post-feminism, kind of the feminism in which they grew out of, this idea that after the second wave of feminism, we've gotten to a place where there's no longer that need for like a radical social justice form of feminism, and it turns very much into an individualized kind of freedom and choice, but that freedom and choice is really kind of tied up to consumerism and less about like a collective body. And I think too that one of the things that has been coming up a lot in my reading too is that in regards to feminism, and also just talking to students about what that term means, the F word, and there's this real fear around it. And also this real want to universalize it, like a one-size-fits-all feminism, when it's really a multiplicity of feminisms and they're all working at the same time, and sometimes they're contradictory, but that doesn't undo some of the necessities of them, so.
Do they have, I mean, as you were talking there, I was thinking about lineages and sort of forebears, like what, and obviously they come out of a theatrical tradition too, right? Or maybe a fringe tradition, like were they fringe?
Fleabag came from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
But in terms of television, what are their avatars? Are there precursor texts that you think they sort of are either consciously or not coming out of?
I think one that kind of always comes up when prior to these two is, I think Lena Dunham's Girls came up right before. Before that, it was Sex and the City. Ally McBeal, just some of the few that are kind of considered more like post-feminist texts, because they really focus like on this hyper-individualization. Part of post-feminism too also focuses on this like bodily makeover paradigm. With those post-feminist shows, they're really focused on heterosexual romantic relationships. And at the end, they're really focused on kind of having a happy ending in that sense. But with Chewing Gum and Fleabag, and not to spoil the ending for people, but neither of them end up in these necessarily happy heterosexual relationships. They both end up single. And I think that also something historically with comedy is that it's always been touted as the genre, in comparison to tragedy, the one that has that happy ending. It all gets tied up into a nice bow. There's a restoring of the peace or the order.
It's very Shakespearean, right?
Yes. Like, yeah. Yes, exactly. And I like how these shows challenge, what is that happy ending? Can one not be happy single and without that traditional heterosexual relationship?
Is there a favorite moment from these shows that you can think of clip or an instance which sort of encapsulates for you what they're about?
There's one for Fleabag that comes to mind just because I also just watched it, and I think it comes from the first episode in the first series. Fleabag and her sister Claire, they have a kind of a strained relationship with their dad, and he always sends the two of them to these feminist lectures, and it's a sea of mostly white women, and it's the two of them, and the lecturer asks,
"Please raise your hands if you would trade 5 years of your life for the so-called perfect body."
And both of them shoot their hands up.
"We are bad feminists."
And everyone else is just deadpan and like silent in that moment. And I think that that is kind of a really funny, clever, and also confusing moment, because it's like, are we, the character of Fleabag always kind of plays into, I'm going to say, like, quote unquote, like the naughtiness of life, right? She says what people are thinking. She does things that you necessarily wouldn't in terms of trying to be polite or trying to move around the world. And I think that what Fleabag does really well, and I think in that instance too, is like really playing with the idea of like, what does it mean to be a feminist? Am I doing it poorly? If I'm doing it poorly, how do you do it right? And that's kind of one of the instances that I really enjoy in Fleabag. In Chewing Gum, this I don't think is the most, but it's one that's really interesting because for Michaela Cole, she deals with so many different topics in such a poetic way in my eyes. There's one instance, I can't remember if it's from the first season or the second season, but this show is centered around a 24-year-old virgin on a quest to lose her virginity. And she's also just really experimenting with growing up. And so part of that comes with casual sex. She gets involved with this man who has a fetish for black women, which she doesn't realize until after the fact. And it's really interesting to watch her kind of grapple with that when she thinks it's a kind of a very innocent situation, but then she's kind of got all these different dynamics going on throughout her life. And so I like the way that the shows can tackle some pretty serious content, but through the lens of comedy that makes it somewhat, I don't want to say palatable, because like a lot of these topics just are not palatable, but they have it in a way where you get to see it without feel like you're being lectured about something.
Right. As you were speaking, I was thinking of Baroness von Sketch.
Yes.
Hilarious. But they do something similar, I think, mm-hmm. where they're definitely informed by feminist thought, mm-hmm. feminist ethics, philosophy and theory. Like they know their stuff, but they're often making fun of the sort of pieties of and the certainties of some of that discourse, mm-hmm. right? It makes you feel like it's okay to be imperfect.
Mm-hmm. And Roxane Gay, she has the essay Bad Feminist from her collection of essays titled Bad Feminist. And she talks explicitly about, she's like, I would rather be a feminist than be no feminist at all, because to suggest that there's one right way of being a feminist also suggests there's one right way of being a woman, or one right way of like being whichever gender you are. So, and that's just like not the case. Like yeah. Everyone's going to do it imperfectly, and that's okay.
Thanks very much for joining me, Christina. That was really great. And I'm really looking forward to your colloquium presentation coming up.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. Thanks to Christina Mansueti for joining me in conversation. Technical production by Robin Davies. Music by Greg Bush. The Colloquium series will be back on October 20th, 2023, with a presentation by Leon Potter from the Theatre Department titled Spectacular Spectacle, A Brief Look at the History of Special Effects on Stage. For more information, go to ah.viu.ca and click on Colloquium Series. I'm Theo Finnegan. Thanks for listening.